With the threat of funding cuts looming for the nation's libraries and museums, what's the future for Jacksonville's Museum of Contemporary Art? We speak with the new director of MoCA just ahead. Good Thursday morning. And live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Also, subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or download the WJCT app. Listen anytime. You can stream this show live right now on our Facebook page, too. Just ahead, it's your chance to connect with the new director of MoCA, Kathleen Doherty. Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, April is Better Speech and Hearing Month. Are you one of the 23 million Americans who has trouble hearing? We'll tell you about a free seminar that can get you some help here in Jacksonville. Plus, New York artist Michael Allen on a once-in-a-lifetime show this weekend in Jacksonville, and some ideas for your weekend from The Spectator, all of that and more ahead this hour. But first this morning, she is a brand new face on the local arts and culture scene. Kathleen Doherty has been chosen to lead the Downtown Museum of Contemporary Art Jacksonville. Doherty is a native of Scotland, but she's been in the States for some time, and she has big plans for MoCA. She has thoughts about everything from her plans for the museum, the local art scene, the threat of funding cuts to our nation's cultural institutions, and more. As she steps into Studio 5 to take your calls, Kathleen Doherty, welcome to Jacksonville and welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And what are your questions for the new head of the Museum of Contemporary Art, Director Kathleen Doherty? Give us a call. And what do you think about potential funding cuts, by the way, to the nation's libraries and museums under the proposed Trump budget that Congress will take up later this year? Give us a call on that too, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email, tweet the show, or weigh in on Facebook. First off, congratulations. Exciting to have a new face at MoCA. Welcome to Jacksonville.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
And you are from Scotland. I know you've had some really interesting posts around the United States, but is it like going home a little bit again to be so close to the ocean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the Atlantic, but from the other side.
Exactly.
And that's
right.
Always lovely. You know, it's I think it's something that's life-giving. Just yesterday, actually, after having my kind of intense conversations and a full-on day of strategy and bullet points and agendas, there's nothing quite like strolling along the beach there at Atlantic Beach and feeling the air and the sea.
Now, you come to Jacksonville with a university art museum background, most recently in Michigan.
That's right. At Michigan, I was privileged to be the deputy director, curatorial affairs, and the senior curator for the Eli and Edith Broad Art Museum, which is at Michigan State. Go green, as they say.
Right.
And it's Zaha Hadid designed, beautiful gem of a museum. Very much like MoCA in that it has a permanent collection of a historic nature, but has temporary contemporary exhibitions about the artists of our time. And so that was that kind of kinship that I felt between the Broad and what I saw here at MoCA was something very attractive.
And with your international background, not only were you chief curator in Michigan, you've been a teacher and a gallery director in Ireland. You've been a curator in Qatar, in the Middle East. You have an international sensibility. Hmm. You're going to, I assume, bring that to bear on MoCA and maybe try to give it more of a national and even international footprint in the museum world.
For sure. You know, I think that there's a few things to say is that regional, local, regional, national, international, to me, they are not mutually exclusive. They each enrich one another. And that I think that kind of multi-layering of audiences and perspectives is a great thing to bring into one institution. What's special for me about MoCA Jacksonville is that, like the other institutions I've been part of, it has a very distinct sense of itself and a sense of place. It's part of a community which clearly has a heart and a beating heart. And yet it can reach, I believe, international audiences. So regional, local, regional, national, international. I'm interested in how each enriches one another.
We'll go to your calls for NUMOCA Director Kathleen Doherty in a moment at 549-2937. I thought your name was Caitlin, but it's Kathleen, as you told me, skinny Kath, skinny Kathleen. Now, of course, MOCA is a cultural resource of the University of North Florida, and that really has helped steady the museum in terms of funding and its positioning in the community. That said, there are potential funding cuts pending to an array of cultural institutions in this country at the federal level. Libraries, museums, the National Endowment for the Arts, public broadcasting, possibly. How do you see your role as leading MOCA in this time of political polarization where funding for the arts is very much a divisive question right now?
Well, I think first and foremost, art and therefore and contemporary art and therefore the museum which I'm a part of, and any art institution cannot exist in a vacuum. It does not exist in a vacuum. It is part of a society. It is part of a community, reflective of it, and responds to it. With that said, a number of museums nationally are responding differently to the current political changes and focus. And as you say, potential very significant funding cuts. I think museums have a responsibility. We are a civic institution. We have a civic responsibility, and as such, that is not to pontificate, rather that is to engage conversation, to engage dialogue, to be at the forefront of those conversations. And, you know, as a civic institution, we are serving our community. Our community needs to also be aware that in time of hardship, in times of cutbacks, how important is a museum to the fabric of this this place, and I think it is hugely important. So in many ways, in times of greatest hardship, that's an opportunity for the community to really rally behind what is important to the fabric of that community, what makes that community. And to me, that is museums, that is libraries, that is public broadcasting, that is art and culture. And I think that any great society, any society that you look at that is holistic, has art and culture as part of its lifeblood. So I urge the community to respond to that and to really see the value and express the value that they see in these institutions.
And as you look ahead to the next year or two, what are some of the exhibits and types of work you'd like to bring to MOCA to just further its imprint, particularly in the downtown urban core where it has played, it continues to play such a large role?
Well, I think, you know, we have some tremendous programming going on at MOCA, both at exhibition curatorial level and within the education and public programs arena. I mean, only next week, for example, there are events happening touching exactly that downtown core, our community. We're involved in our downtown art walk next week, May 3rd, as we always are with our cultural fusion. We kick off on May 6th, the summer, with our annual family day. Hemming Park will be sprung alive with art making, art enjoyment and fun. And there will be family-friendly events happening in the museum. This week and next week, we have for the first time responded to the fact that we want to embrace our downtown community by having between 11 and 2, Tuesday through Friday, all week, free and open to any resident or person working in the downtown urban core. Mm-hmm. Come down, enjoy this civic institution, feel connected with it, see that this is a resource for you, feel that ownership and connection of this museum. So I invite everyone to take advantage of that. It's a tremendously cathartic moment during your lunch break to come down and just breathe for a moment.
We all need that. I really need that, quite
frankly. So all of that is happening just next week alone. just in 1 week.
Wow, you're off. You're off with a bang, aren't you?
Well, the team that is there, the programming that is there, is tremendous, and they are hugely committed. We currently have a Hans Hofmann exhibition, which is a top tier show. I cannot stress that enough. This is a show which is off the level, national and international. A major retrospective exhibition just got a tremendous write up in the Wall Street Journal last week. That's on exhibit currently, as is our Laurie Fredette show, which is in our UNF gallery. As you mentioned before, we have a wonderful relationship with the University of North Florida, and that's hugely important. A show that's coming up just around the corner is Synthesis, which is a show which brings together art and music. Now, who doesn't love that combination of art and music? Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I have a particular love of that. I'm of the art background. My husband is a musician. So the collision of both to me seems perfect. We'll be bringing artists, international artists, together to explore what is art, what is music, and can the two coexist, create something different. You're going to see everything from hip hop artists with spinning disco head, disco ball heads, through to orchestrated music playing vacuum cleaners and everything in between.
Wow.
So I think the community is just going to respond to that show. And I'd like to say how I'd like to congratulate our really wonderful curator, Jamie, for curating that exhibition and bringing it to Jacksonville.
Excellent. And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with the new director of MoCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art Jacksonville, Kathleen Doherty, bringing a very lovely Scottish accent to Studio 5. If it's not Scottish, it's crap, right?
Whoop, whoop.
I'm Scott. I mean, I love that skit on SNL. I'm Scottish, so I can't say to be completely objective here. Okay, 549-2937. CJ on the South Side. Hi, CJ. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My question is, how are you looking at emergent trends in contemporary art? I think especially popular with younger people, like street art, and then also emerging technologies like virtual reality and augmented reality and things like Tilt Brush, where you can create these virtual 3D sculptures that you can see using these virtual reality goggles and things like that. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, CJ.
Hi, CJ. Well, thanks very much for calling in and for the question. In terms of emerging trends, MoCA to me should be a space for experimentation. It should be a space for possibility and for ideas to be explored without always necessarily knowing what the outcome might be. That is the joy for me of contemporary art. And as artists continue to explore all different realms, all different medias, all different dialogues, it's really important that we embrace that and reflect that. You mentioned augmented reality and virtual reality. Actually, that's been an interest of mine in the past. And in fact, when I was in Qatar, I worked with Virginia Commonwealth University School of the Arts in collaboration with Qatar Museum's archaeology department to create an exhibition which used augmented reality, virtual reality, 3D imaging in order to bring to life within a contemporary gallery in an in a exploratory way, the findings of the archaeology department out in the sand, out in the desert. And, you know,
that's amazing. I mean, what was it like to be in the art world in Qatar? That's not a place that comes to top of mind, I think, here in America anyway, when you think of contemporary art.
Yeah, well, you know, actually Qatar for the last number of years has been the number one art, the contemporary art buying place in the world. Sheikh Hamayasa and Sheikh Hamosa through Qatar Foundation are absolutely, and Qatar Museums are absolutely committed to using museums or utilizing museums as a vehicle for contemporary conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, we can say that out loud, but I felt like very much I was part of a unique moment in Qatar because to be able to genuinely say that you were involved in dialogues and work that was contributing to facilitating conversations around national identity on a global stage is quite incredible. And when you bring that outside of Qatar, you bring it outside of the Middle East, back to your earlier question about the importance of the arts, the importance of the arts and institutions to America right now at this time of change in administration, I think it's very, very important. It underlines the fact museums, galleries, art have a responsibility and have an opportunity to lead conversations that could not be had in other realms. And that's the artist provides a unique lens on the society that they're part of.
549-2937 to connect with new MoCA director Kathleen Doherty. MoCA played that role before you came here to Jacksonville when an exhibit sparked controversy, and often contemporary art runs into the buzzsaw of politics, and it could again here in town with you at the helm. We'll have to see what types of exhibits spark what kinds of reactions, but before you arrived here, of course, there was a flap over a photograph of a nude pregnant woman that a former city councilman called pornography and demanded be removed. And there was much hue and cry about that, protests, people marching with signs, people accusing the councilman of having backward views about modern art. How do you see MoCA navigating the political situation here in Jacksonville, where we really do have, I think, a stark divide between the so-called creative class, people that really appreciate edgy contemporary art, and more traditionalists who might be more likely to take offense to provocative works?
I firstly would challenge somewhat the notion of a divide, because I think art touches everyone and has the potential to be truly transformative for everyone, regardless of socioeconomic or political opinion or position. Now, obviously, you only need to Google, a very short Google search will bring up the flap as you,
I'm sure you did that.
Described it.
Yeah,
absolutely. So art should, in my opinion, always prompt conversation. If someone walks into a show, into a museum, and their response to me is, it's fine, or it's nice, or it was okay, that's not being a successful show. Rather, it should...
You want strong opinions.
I want opinion. I want to start conversation. Now, am I talking about shock for shock's sake? No, we're all over that in the contemporary art world. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about having genuine conversation, whether you... and productive conversation. That's the key thing, productive conversation. So, throwing words around like pornography, I think actually there's a very specific definition around that word, which is difficult to apply to the particular photograph we're talking about. But the whole conversation that was sparked allowed people to have a conversation, and allowed people to think, well, maybe from my perspective, looking at this work, I look at the celebration of motherhood. And as a mother, the idea of celebrating motherhood and the child and that particular unique closeness that can never be taken away from the mother and the child is to me a beautiful conversation around that particular image. Mm-hmm. The fact that it sparked again this idea of a community rallying in support of its institutions, it sparked the whole I stand with MoCA hashtag,
right?
And I think I've seen that on t-shirts, I stand with MoCA, and as the new director, I very much stand with MoCA.
All right, let's go to some more calls for new MoCA director Kathleen Doherty. Calls from all over the listening area. 549-2937. We're going to go now to Eric. He's all the way over near Lake City this morning. Hey, Eric, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you today?
Great, thanks.
The question is, it's a little deep, but it's something I've been writing and thinking about for probably about 30 years, and that is that recently, the Kovner did an excellent exhibition showing perspectives of primarily African-American artists. There were some protests, and protests in the sense of economic. I'm not sure if our Scottish friend here is aware of that. Most of the old money in this town comes from South Georgia, not beyond, and sometimes it has a great deal of effect on what's happening. But I was concerned with is I really appreciate your promoting dialogue and insight, but I also know President Delaney at the university, which I understand has a small part to play in the museum, has sometimes said that there really aren't any racial issues that are that big anymore. Said this before Ferguson on my ad. And my concern is that it's not, the fact is that Jacksonville is on track to become a majority minority city 10 years ahead of the rest of the U.S. So in other words, instead of 2035 become a majority minority city, we will probably do it in 2025. And the concern is like, how do we get not just African Americans, but Asian Americans, who are almost always overlooked in the city, and Hispanics in the play at your museum to have dialogues about current issues, but also about the great art that all three of these committees have produced around the U.S. Is that something that you want to do, or is that something, I know Melissa's old friends over at Dalton Agency, et cetera, have played a role in trying to help, but sometimes impeding, making this city more of a, let's say, more of a diverse city in reality instead of just on paper.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks for the call. And, you know, it brings to mind another recent flap involving another museum, the Kummer Museum, an exhibit there called Lift, which looked at the African-American experience, caused some problems for the former director of that museum, Hope McMath. Race is never an easy subject in this city or in this country. So what about his call?
Well, thanks very much for that question. I am aware of the particular show at the Kummer and the conversations around that, which seemed to me to be conversations that were important ones to have. And again, I think the Kummer needs to be applauded for the fact that by having an exhibition, there is a catalyst for those conversations to take place. You mentioned the conversations around race are always difficult ones to have, but as an institution, you have an opportunity to provide that platform, be that convener of conversation. And as a civic institution, we have that particular remit, I believe. And diversity, conversations around race, but diversity in general, and I kind of broaden out the conversation to talk about diversity in general in terms of gender, in terms of religion, in terms of political persuasion, as well as race. I think diversity is a conversation that needs to be at the heart of almost all conversations we are having. Certainly, only this week I was meeting with the Cultural Council to discuss just that, issues of diversity within the cultural fabric of Jacksonville, something that's absolutely at the top thought of the Cultural Council and many others working within Jacksonville and beyond. And, you know, I should say from the outset, I am not of this place. I am learning of this place. And I think it's important to say that out loud. Every context that I have worked within across three different continents have had very specific social conversations, sensitivities that were particular to that place. In the Middle East, that was a traditional Arab Muslim society. And I needed to, as a non-Muslim,
try to blend
Arab
in with that
woman, be a, not even try to blend in with it. I think it's more about recognizing it, respecting it, and operating within that particular context with a cultural sensitivity and an awareness. In Ireland, when I was director of Lismore Castle Arts, Lismore Castle is a 17th century castle behind castle walls in the heart of rural Ireland, the south of Ireland. It is owned by an English landowner, the Duke of Devonshire, part of the English aristocracy. Now,
isn't Chatsworth enough for him? Sorry.
Well, both are particularly exquisite, I have to say, and I had the joy of being able to work in both.
I only know about Chatsworth from watching PBS, by the way. But go ahead.
Yeah, and all those wonderful period dramas, which are all filmed there. Mm-hmm. But even in that context, you know, you might think, oh, in Ireland, what were the conversations around race that you were having? Well, or around diversity in the broader sense? Well, very specifically, I was director of an institution which was established in itself with private funding in a castle in rural Ireland, which took
totally
a lot
different
of navigating.
From, it couldn't be more different than the Middle East context you
Absolutely.
Were in. Yeah. And
Absolutely.
And now here you are in the bold new city of the South, Jacksonville, Florida.
And here I am in Jacksonville,
here
Florida.
Here you are in Duval. It's just what an incredible background you have and what fresh energy and fresh eyes you're going to bring to this new role. It's really exciting to meet you and learn more about your vision for Mocha.
Thank you very much.
And please do keep us posted and come back soon, I hope.
There's exciting things ahead.
She's Kathleen Doherty, the new executive director of Mocha, the Museum of Contemporary Art Jacksonville. And much more still ahead later, The Spectator with weekend events. Plus, don't miss it, we're going to continue an art discussion as we welcome New York artist Michael Allen on a once-in-a-lifetime live art show here this weekend. We'll tell you what that's all about. But up next, your chance to improve your hearing. If you're struggling with that, we'll explain. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Goodwill of North Florida. Donate, shop, jobs. Good things for North Florida with Goodwill. Proud supporters of WJCT's First Coast Connect. GoodwillJax.org for more info.
I'm Joshua Johnson. Next time on 1A, can the president come through on what he promised for American businesses? His Treasury team has a new blueprint for big tax cuts with few details on how to pay for it. The stock market likes it, but what about American workers and business owners? The View from the Factory Floor next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele inviting you to join us this weekend for a Prairie Home Companion from the famed Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul. Our guests include Lucius, Mr. Brad Meldow, and comic Tom Papa, plus our acting company Serena Brooks, Sue Scott, Tim Russell, and sound effects man Fred Newman, my song of the week, our first call radio players, and much, much more.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's estimated that some 35 million Americans suffer from hearing loss, and that number is steadily increasing with our aging population. But most of those having trouble hearing tend not to use a hearing aid, mainly because they don't like the way it looks. But there are lots of options out there to improve your hearing. April marks Better Speech and Hearing Month. And if you've been thinking about a cochlear implant for this, there's a free seminar coming up next week. And unlike hearing aids, hearing implants are often covered by insurance, including Medicare and Medicaid. Dr. Elizabeth Selly is a board-certified audiologist with the Hearing Center at the Jacksonville Hearing and Balance Institute, and she's here with more. Dr. Selly, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you. And it's amazing how many Americans are having trouble hearing. 35 million Americans. Why do we see this number continually ticking upward? Is it just that people are getting older?
So, you know, as people get older, we certainly see a lot of hearing loss in the aging population. A lot of hearing loss can actually be due to noise. We see even the younger population having hearing loss because of the level of music that they're listening to. Mm-hmm. But it's really just one of the most common even disorders that are at birth as well. So mm-hmm. across the spectrum, we're seeing hearing loss in many, many people.
FDA-approved implants, there's an enormous amount of clinical evidence that shows that if you go with an implant, you hear on average 2 to 3 times better than with a hearing aid. What makes the implant so much better?
So there are a lot of factors that can play into that. A cochlear implant is very different than a hearing aid. A hearing aid works very well for people with, you know, a mild to moderate, even to a severe hearing loss, where the sensory cells that are responsible for sending that signal to the nerve, they're still relatively intact. Mm-hmm. So the hearing aid, it brings the volume up to a level that compensates for their hearing loss, and then sends the signal to the organ of hearing. It goes to the nerve and then up to the brain. In some cases, those hair cells, that damage is so severe that regardless of the volume, those hair cells cannot send the message to the nerve and speech is distorted and unclear. The cochlear implant essentially bypasses those hair cells and directly stimulates that hearing nerve.
And it tends to be more covered by insurance, which I didn't realize.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Unfortunately, hearing aids more times than not are not a benefit under most insurance plans. Cochlear implants are. They're classified as a medical device. And most of the time, the primary insurance picks up most of it, and then a supplemental insurance picks up the rest. There may be some cost to the patient. It's relatively minor.
Who's a good candidate for this?
A good candidate would be someone who obviously has a hearing loss, who has tried hearing aids, and even though they are well-programmed, well-recommended, they are just still struggling significantly to understand speech in quiet rooms, especially in noisy environments. So those would be the type of candidates that would move on to a cochlear implant.
Okay, and so with all of that said, you have a big free event coming up next week, a free hearing health seminar.
Yes. On May 1st, Hearing Health Seminar at the Sheraton. During this event, we'll serve dinner and it'll have we'll have representatives from a cochlear implant company, as well as audiologists, and the surgeon at Jacksonville Hearing and Balance, who does many of these surgeries. It'll be a good opportunity to ask questions, find out more information about how it differs from a hearing aid, and even meet people who currently have a cochlear implant.
And hear how it's working for them. Again, this is coming up next Monday night, May 1st, 6:30 p.m. at the Sheraton Jacksonville. That's on Deerwood Park Boulevard, right at Gate Parkway and JTB. You can register at hearinghealthseminar.com. Registration required for this free event, but come on out. It's a free seminar if you need better hearing health, because April is Better Speech and Hearing Month. Thanks for getting the word out to everyone listening. She's Dr. Elizabeth Selly, board-certified audiologist with the Hearing Center at the Jacksonville Hearing and Balance Institute. Thanks, doctor.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And still ahead, weekend events, plus New York-based artist Michael Allen brings his incredible live art show to Jacksonville.
For years, journalist Bruce Weber began his day like this.
You know, usually after I say hello to my colleagues, it would be, okay, so who's dead?
Weber wrote more than 1,000 obituaries for the New York Times. On the next Fresh Air, we talk with Weber and fellow Times obituary writer Marguerite Fox, who were featured in the new documentary, Obit. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
give me the names of every state capital that include the word city. Come on, come on, what's the holdup? I'm Ophira Eisenberg. Do you have way too much information floating around in your head? Then NPR's Ask Me Another might just be for you. It's a whole hour of puzzles, word games, and trivia. Oh, and the answers are Oklahoma City, Carson City, Jefferson City, and Salt Lake City. But you knew that, right?
Sundays at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Join WJCT at Fort Caroline Timucuan Preserve on April 29th to explore the outdoors for International Migratory Bird Day. Kids will have the opportunity to become a National Park Junior Ranger, hunt for nature treasures, win prizes, and more. Clifford the Big Red Dog will be on hand with National Park Rangers, teaching families about how to preserve existing natural habitats. This fun family event is free and runs from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Go to wjct.org/events for more information.
Welcome back. Well, New York-based artist Michael Allen is renowned not only for his studio work, but also his live art pieces. Allen's recent draw-a-thon theater in Brooklyn attracted live nude models, and they struck poses from the silly to the sublime. He calls it Michael Allen's living installation, where he turns everyday people he meets into living art objects. Now, normally, Allen hosts these live events in and around New York, but he's graciously agreed to host his first ever show outside of New York City, right here in Jacksonville. This is a really special treat. You need to go check this out. It's coming up tomorrow night at Space 42. We've got a preview right now as Michael Allen joins us in studio. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
So good to see you. And you brought your sketch pad with you. You're going to just draw as we talk because you just love to draw.
That's it.
This is so incredible. Tell me how this show is going to work, because from everything I've heard and read, this is a really unique opportunity for people to come see you at work.
Sure. How it's going to go is basically we're working with different people in the community, and I'll be building on them and painting on them live, and then they'll be...
You're going to paint on them as people come in and watch.
Yes. They'll get to see the whole progression from the beginning to the end.
How did you hit upon this mode of expression?
I've always drawn people, trees, and nature my whole life, and I saw there was a little void in New York at the time, and I wanted to work with models and performers that were kind of modeling for art that weren't doing any performance, and I felt, how can I bring my art to life? So I wanted to work with other people to do that instead of animate it.
What was the show like in Brooklyn with the nude models?
We do that every week. It's a mixture of well, they kind of start off nude and they become fully costumed creatures. You know, it's quite funny and great.
You just paint on them,
paint and dress them and make hats and masks, and I don't know, it's fun. I work with my partner Jana and Mike K, and we just kind of make a whole world.
And you use any kind of material?
Yes. Yeah, I wouldn't just say paint.
Yeah, you use all kinds of materials.
Correct. Yes.
So if people come out tomorrow night and they wear white, you're going to start drawing right on them.
I'm going to draw on their skin. They could buy white shirts, and I'll make some shirts for them. We have shirts there.
And this is one night only. It's going to be just a surreal and human installation of art. This is the first show you've ever done outside of New York. Is that right?
Well, that's not correct.
But not
my
correct?
First live long show, I guess.
Your first live show.
Yeah, I did a bunch of shows in other cities.
This is going to include the live model drawing, live DJ set, a chance to check out Space 42. How are the models going to be? Can people just walk in and be a model, or how does it work?
Well, we have like a casted crew right now that the gallery found, and basically they're, you know, have my work up, and then there'll be different performers that I'll be transforming into all different types of characters, and people could come and draw and watch, or some people could, you know, potentially join in during the session as well.
Is every show a little different?
Yes, it's all different. It's all impromptu mixed with, you know, live creation and changing. Everything's always changing. It isn't like one person's painted into a panda. The person keeps changing and switching and moving, and it's like evolution of time. And it's almost like the show is one night, but it feels like a continuation of like 30 days in one night.
This is exciting for Jacksonville because our local art scene has really exploded in recent years, and more works like yours are being drawn into our arts district.
That's great.
Is that what brought you here?
I believe so, because my work is about change and accepting change and time. That's basically the general theme with my drawings. There's always layers and layers, And then with the live works, which aren't my main works, that's about change and accepting change and accepting who we are as people. Mm-hmm. So I think the performers and the musicians and the space and the community being brave, doing what it is they need to do to make something great happen, shows a whole lot of acceptance and getting together. And that's, to me, what art is about.
And this is also a change from New York. The ticket price in Jacksonville, only $20. You want everyone to be able to access this.
We do,
this.
Yeah. I always want it to be for people to be able to go.
Yeah. Isn't it? And this is coming up tomorrow night, Friday night, 6 p.m. at Space 42. That's in Riverside at 2670 Phyllis Street. And once you do the show, is video of it going to be brought back, I think, to New York?
Yeah, my plan is to take a lot of the stuff that I'm making here and bring it back to New York and talk about Jacksonville at my next show in New York and just kind of keep moving with that. The masks that I make and like costumes on stage and the work transplants back to New York, and then I could educate some of my friends about what's going on out here. So I just like to keep moving it all over the world.
Would you be willing to stay after the show and draw on
a few
of us?
To.
That would be so cool.
I love to stay anywhere and draw anywhere.
Okay, and I'm going to ask one of our videographers to get some video of that so we can post it later and people can see this amazing work that you do. He's New York-based artist Michael Allen. Go see his show tomorrow night, 6 o'clock, at Space 42 on Phyllis Street in Riverside. Such a pleasure to meet you.
Thanks for being here. And I'm posting videos on my Instagram that people could kind of see progress at Michael Allen Alien. Allen, A-L-A-N.
All right. We'll be right back.
Men in Chechnya are reportedly being rounded up, tortured, and even killed as politicians preach homophobia across the former Soviet Union.
Homosexual propaganda is a disgusting, immoral disease of a modern anti-Christian society.
Next time on Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross.
Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
On the next Jazz Night in America, piano giant Randy Weston at 90. And I get to hang out with him at his Brooklyn home.
My mother gave me the black church, so I had Panamanian father and a Virginian mama. I'm born in Brooklyn, with all the Caribbean and African and all the different people in Brooklyn, you know. So the culturally, it was very rich.
I'm Christian McBride, and that's on the next Jazz Night in America.
Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Thursdays at 11 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, it's a truly magical tradition. If you've never been to the big butterfly festival at Tree Hill in Arlington, you simply have to go. This Saturday, it's, I think, the 16th anniversary of the festival. Lots is happening, but it will culminate in a live butterfly release that you truly have to see to believe. Mark Mumaw is executive director at the Tree Hill Nature Center, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. It's so good to see you. And Tree Hill Nature Center is one of those incredible hidden gems in Jacksonville. You have all kinds of stuff going on there, chickens and goats and wildlife. The Butterfly Festival is your big signature event, and it's exciting because it's always the arrival of spring when you do this. What's going to be happening this weekend?
Well, we try to take this time to get the community together. We'll have food vendors and music And of course, the butterfly release, and we'll have a live butterfly house where visitors can come in and actually get close and personal with the butterflies. It's just a great day. There'll be local, eco-friendly vendors, and it's a good time.
You have a community garden. You provide thousands of pounds of fresh food every year. You provide composting for people. There's a lot going on besides the butterflies.
Right. And during the festival, you actually get to go inside the community garden and see what's going on and how we're basically conducting an organic garden with very little resources.
So. Yeah, you do a lot in the, and it's a pretty compact space right in the middle of the city. That's what makes it, I think, so magical for people.
Yeah, it's 5 minutes from here. So
yeah,
and it's basically a postage stamp of wilderness right in the middle of, you know, a lot of houses in development. So,
and how has it survived over the years? Because I'm sure people might want to build on the nature center there, but here you are.
Well, basically, basically it's a huge effort with my staff, funders, stakeholders, just everybody that has their heart in it over the years. You know, we have a very, very small budget, and sometimes it feels like I never leave the center, but, you know, it's my passion, and most of my staff, it's their passion, so we just put everything we have into it.
Now, this Saturday, the festival kicks off, and by the way, the full name of it is the 2017 Joseph A. Strasser Butterfly Festival. Mm-hmm. I guess he was a benefactor.
Yeah, Mr. Yeah. Strasser is invested in Tree Hill many, many, many years, and he's basically helped us in ways that we're very appreciative and thankful.
Things are going to kick off Saturday, April 29th, 10 a.m. at the Tree Hill Nature Center on Lone Star Road. When does the big moment come and you release thousands of butterflies at once?
The butterfly release is at 3:30, so we'll make an announcement probably about 3 o'clock for everybody to gather on top of the hill. And it's a spectacular event. I'll have a dreamer from Dreams Come True that's going to actually help me release. So a child will help me release the butterflies, and they'll go up and down into the crowd. Last year, they went down into the crowd and just basically just covered everybody that was standing close to the release platform. Yeah, there's a really nice video on YouTube. If you search Tree Hill Butterfly Release, you can see it.
Oh, that just gives me chills, you know.
Yeah, me too.
And I don't even know how you do it, how you make it work, but it does work, and it is truly spectacular. Yeah. Go see the butterfly release at the Butterfly Festival this Saturday at Tree Hill Nature Center. They're in Arlington at 7152 Lone Star Road. If you've never been out to Tree Hill, you need to go. It is so cool. Mark Mumaugh is executive director there. Again, that's this Saturday. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you for having me.
Lots of ideas for your weekend. Meanwhile, finally this hour, from Welcome to Rockville to the opening of the beaches, lots of things going on. Here she is every Thursday to take us all around town. We welcome the mistress of mayhem, the maven of mirth. She's listening to a webinar entitled Rock My Image. TheSpectator.com's Carrie Speckman is here.
Jen DeVore Richter. One of the first things she says is, do not multitask. Turn off your Facebook.
Which is exactly what you're doing.
And I'm like tweeting and doing this at the same time.
And you had your earbuds in listening to a webinar. You don't need any help rocking your image.
Well, that part I've got.
I think so.
Yeah, the other stuff.
The other stuff. Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll have to listen to it later. But meanwhile, you've got a full list. We just talked about the Butterfly Festival and artist Michael Allen in town from New York. There are so many choices.
So many.
What else do you have on your list, my dear?
Tonight, Trace Adkins, he's a country artist.
Sold over 10 million albums.
That is correct. What I know him best for is winning Celebrity Apprentice.
Oh, that's right. He did win that.
He raised $1.5 million for, I believe it was Red Cross.
Very nice.
But he's been nominated for Grammys and all that other stuff.
And that's tonight at Thrasher Horn in Orange Park. Go see Trace Adkins.
That is correct. Adkins.
Okay, drum roll please. Everybody make some noise. We have a ticket giveaway. All right, what tickets do you have today?
Party of the Decade! It's at Anheuser-Busch. It's a Buzz Magazine joint. And it's kind of fun because the first part of the party starts in the 20s. And if you buy that ticket, you have to stay in the 20s. Not that having to is a bad thing.
Okay.
But then if you buy the next level, you get to go to the 60s.
The groovy 60s.
And the next level, you get to go to the 80s.
Rockin' 80s. What? The 50s and the 70s are chopped liver?
Well, they can, I mean, how many rooms
I guess
can
they
have?
They had to pick only a few decades.
Yeah, exactly.
But you have two tickets to this.
Two. All access. You can go 20s, 60s, 80s.
All right.
Boom.
Email the show now if you want two tickets to Party of the Decades Friday night at the Anheuser-Busch Brewery. Email us now at firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. The unimpeachable Kevin Mershart will pick the winner at random.
Unimpeachable.
Okay. Also Saturday in Five Points, they're going to have the Strides for Pride 5K in Riverside Park and a big Spring Fest in Five Points all at the same time.
Well, actually, the 5K starts first.
Okay.
And then there's a little celebration after that. It's to benefit Jasmine. And then after, there's a post-race party. And then people are welcome. Well, everybody's welcome to come to Spring Fest. They close down the street. Food vendors. Come check out the stores.
Sure.
Music.
Also Saturday and Sunday, the Riverside Avondale Preservation Tour of Homes. I will be going.
Will you?
I already got my tickets, my friend.
Did you?
Yep.
Good for you.
I love that home tour.
It is. It's,
yeah.
It's, and for, you know, people, you drive by a house and you're like, oh, I wonder what it looks like inside. Now you can go and not get arrested.
Yeah. RapHomeTour.com. And by the way, there's fencing all around WJCT.
Yes, and a Ferris wheel.
And a Ferris wheel what? Because Welcome to Rockville is coming. Here's a listen to just one of the bands. Take a wild guess.
Lawrence Welk.
No, it is not Lawrence Welk. Just take a wild guess. Who is this?
It's Def Leppard.
It's Def Leppard, everybody.
Doy.
They will be headlining Welcome to Rockville.
That is why
on Sunday,
I am going.
And Soundgarden is the headliner on Saturday.
That is correct. Offspring, Perfect Circle, Coheed, and Cambria. They have, I believe it's three stages, more than 40 acts, a Ferris wheel, food trucks.
Oh, yeah.
Beer tents. Yeah.
It's going to be huge. They have the trailers up all around our building, the fences. We see them running in and out, getting ready for this massive music festival.
They almost didn't let me in.
Really?
Yeah, they already have it.
Don't they know who you are? I guess not. Okay, so it's Welcome to Rockville, Saturday and Sunday here in downtown Jacksonville. Also Saturday, the Mystery Trip Suitcase Party. That helps people living with disabilities. I've been to this. It's at the Malone Air Charter Hangar at Craig Field. When you go to this, if you win the prize, they fly you away or limo you away.
Cool. Like you're
on
just
a mystery
sitting there
trip.
And then they draw the number. And they're like, oh, hey, Melissa Ross, guess what?
Yeah.
Here's your airplane.
Yeah.
And you get in the plane.
And you get on the plane and
you
go.
Get on the plane. And you don't know where you're going.
It's
and you
can really
have dinner.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. But even if you don't,
yeah.
The event itself is very cool also.
Also Sunday, the opening of the Beaches Parade. The Shrimps and Sharks play this weekend. And Carrie Speckman.
Did you just say Shrimps? I think you did.
The Shrimp and Sharks play this weekend. And Carrie Speckman will be front row at Rockville. Look for her
pink and
purple hair.
Yes. Rock on.
Rock on, sister.
Woo!
Go to thespectator.com for a full list of weekend events. Meanwhile, this has been First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross. 1A's up next. And we'll be back at 9 a.m. tomorrow for our Friday Media Roundtable. See you then.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.